Open your Bibles, if you would, with me this morning to the 32nd chapter of the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 32, we'll be reading verses 1 through 12 in just a moment. Now, in our series through the last, so say two-thirds, the book of Genesis, we come now again to the character Jacob. When last we spoke of Jacob, he was a boy. He had been born the second oldest of a pair of twins. His older brother Esau was born just ahead of him. In fact, he is named Jacob because he had his holds of his brother's heel, and Jacob actually means heel catcher or heel holder. And so that's what he was doing when he was born, so that's what they named him. And so as Jacob was born and then he grew up, last week we talked about Esau and looked at his life and did a study on his character and his character development. We saw that Jacob kind of creatively took advantage of his older brother a couple of times. He talked him out of his birthright, sold him his birthright for a bowl of soup. And then also later, he and his mother conspired against his brother to take his father's blessing, which his father could only do once. A blessing is only one thing you could give. You couldn't give it. Take it, oh, you fool me, that doesn't count, and give another blessing. That was not possible. And so Jacob had taken everything of value from his older brother, and his older brother, who was an outdoorsman, he was a man's man. He was a hunter, and he was a man of size and strength and ability. And he was angry, and he threatened his brother with his life, and he said, as soon as my father passes away, you're going to be right behind him. My paraphrase of that is, I'm going to get my hands around your scrawny little neck and I'm going to snap it like a twig. Basically, that's what he told him. And Jacob believed him. And so did his mother, Rebecca, and his father. And so they sent him away. They sent him back to Rebecca's family, to her brother, Laban. And Jacob has lived there about 20 years. He lived 14 years paying for working off the debt of purchasing his wives from his father-in-law. I look back on that, and we have missed something in our culture. I gave two daughters away. I mean, gave two daughters away. About the time they get out of college and they start earning money, someone comes along and expects me to give them to them, and that's what I did. But anyway, such is life. But he had done that, and then he spent another 6 years, just 6 or 7 years, just working for his father-in-law, taking care of him, and he had been very successful. He had made his father-in-law wealthy. He had made himself very wealthy. But now it's time to go home, and he gathers his family and his possessions, and they were considerable, and he begins the journey home. And as he begins the journey home, he is scared to death because the last thing he heard his brothers say is, the next time I see you after our father has died, I'm going to kill you. And his brother was not kidding. He was not speaking in metaphorical language. He literally meant, you are going to die the next time we meet. And so he is making this journey, and he is terrified. But what we see transpiring here, and the lessons that we can learn from this event on this night, on this journey home, is they come to this place and they set up a camp with the whole family and the entourage and the possessions and the herds and the herdsmen, and they are all there. He is terrified of what he's going to face over the next day or so because he knows he's about to meet his brother Esau. Hasn't seen him for 20 years, but he knows his brother and he knows the hatred and he knows the ability. He knows his brother has been very successful and has become wealthy and powerful back in his homeland, but yet he is going to face him. But what we see happening here is we see a man's faith and his fear meet. He is terrified to do what he knows he should do, but he presses forward anyway to accomplish it. And what we're going to see here is an illustration in this historical event of what will transpire in our lives when, as we walk through life and we run into fearful situations, fearful circumstance. What will we do? How will we respond? How will our faith stand up against our fears that stand before us? It's an important question to ask. It is a very practical reality that all of us will face. So let's read about this together now in Genesis 32, 1 through 12. And Jacob went on his way, and God's angels met him. And when he saw them, Jacob said, "This is God's camp." So he called the place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, "You are to say to my lord Esau, 'This is what your servant Jacob says. I have been staying with Laban and have seen and been delayed until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks, male and female slaves. I have sent this message to inform you, my lord, in order to seek your favor.' And when the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, 'We went to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and he has 400 men with him.' And Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people with him into two camps, along with the flocks and the cattle and the camels. And he thought, 'If Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, the remaining one can escape.' And Jacob said, 'God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, "Go back to your land and to your family, and I will cause you to prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness that you have shown your servant. Indeed, I have crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two camps. Please rescue me from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid of him. Otherwise, he may come and attack me, the mothers and their children. And you have said, "I will cause you to prosper, and I will make your offspring like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted." Okay. Now, at this point, we see a frightened man. But we see a man who is frightened, but despite his fear, and it is a real and palatable fear, we see that he is a man whose faith is overriding his feelings. If you go back a chapter and look at the third verse of chapter 31, you will see this verse. It says, "And the Lord said to him, 'Go back to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you.'" You hear that statement that God here is making to Jacob? Now, Jacob has been there with his father-in-law about 20, 21 years. And he has prospered. He has done well. I am sure that along the way he thought, "Well, this is going to be where I'm going to be. I'm going to live out my days. And I'll live here at least as long until I hear news that my brother Esau has passed away, because I can't go back home with Esau there." But this has been his place. But yet God comes to him. God appears to him, and he comes and he gives him a very direct and very perceptible message. And the message is, "Son, it's time for you to go home. It's time for you to gather yourself, your family, your possessions, all that is within your household. It is time for you to pick up and to go back home. Go back to the land of your father. You've been here in Paddan Aram for about 20 years. You've been under the household of your father-in-law for about 20 years. Now it's time for you to gather up everything that I've blessed you with and travel back home." Now, this terrorizes Jacob, and rightfully so. Again, as I said in the introduction a moment ago, Esau has promised, and Esau is a man of his word. He's not afraid to shed his brother's blood, and he is fully intent on doing that. And so, the last time he saw him, this was what he heard from his brother. So he doesn't want to go. He knows that his brother is strong. He knows that his brother is powerful. He knows that his brother is motivated to bring forth these threats that he had made to him earlier. But yet, his relationship with God overrides his fear. Here is a man who is fearful, but yet he knows that he must be obedient. Even though what God told him to do didn't make much sense to him, it was antithetical to what he felt he should do, it was going to upset his world and change his plans that he had made for he and his wives and his children. All of these plans were now going to be changed, and he was going to be obedient to God. This was the God of his father Isaac, the God of his grandfather Abraham, and it was his God. And he knew that he was the child of promise. He remembered all of those stories that his mother had taught him. He understood what God had led him to do. And here he has been blessed by the hand of God all of these years, has attained great wealth, some power, and now he is being sent home. And he does this. The principle that this teaches us is God has the authority to interrupt our lives, no matter our stage of life. Now, Jacob is not a boy anymore. He's not even a young man. He is a man of somewhat advanced age. He's a long way from being old, but he's a man, he's a mature man. He has wives, he has children, he has responsibilities. Everything is going good, but then God says, I am going to interrupt your life. There is something else I have for you to do. You need to go home. You need to go back to the land of your father. Go back to the land of Canaan. This is my direction to you. And so he's obedient, and he does this. He doesn't particularly want to do it. He is terrified at doing it, but he knows that God has the authority to interrupt his life. And if this was true for Jacob 3,800 years ago, it's true for you and it's true for me. The God of creation, the God of sovereignty, the God who sent his son to be born in Bethlehem, who lived his life, died upon a cross, the God who reached into that tomb and raised his son from the dead, and gave us a means by which we can have an ongoing, forgiven, redeemed relationship with God through his resurrected son. This God has the right and the authority to interrupt our lives. I know we all have plans. I know we all have hopes. I know we all have dreams. I know that we have paths that some of us have been on for a long time, and we think we know where this path is going. And if it ends up going there, that's all fine, and that's well, and that's good, but we have to remember that God has the authority to intervene. He has the authority to change our direction. He says, well, no, he can't change my direction. I've got it all planned out. I had it all planned out since I was 18 years old, and I've been on this path all these years, and God can't change me. Well, I don't mean to discourage you, but yes, he can. He has the authority to do that, and he may or he may not. I'm not saying that God will interrupt your life, but he has that authority. What I will say that he will do for his children or with his children, you may not think it's for you, may think it's to you, but what he will do, he will challenge us. He will give us things and give us directions in our lives, whether it is a full change of direction or path in life or not, he will give us things in our lives that will challenge us. Why? Because growth comes from challenge. Growth comes when God speaks to us and says, you know, this little easy thing you thought you had going on, that's all fine and well and good, but I'm going to change things, and I have something else that I want you to do. And sometimes when God gives us those directions and instructions in our lives, sometimes we respond to him and say, well, God, I'm just not comfortable with that. That just doesn't make me comfortable. I've been on a lot of different committees and things through the years, and sometimes you're sitting in a committee meeting and people are throwing out ideas and we're doing some brainstorming and someone throws out an idea. Then someone else on the committee or the work group hops up and says, well, you know, I'm just not comfortable with that. Now, that's committee or work group speak for. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And we shouldn't go that way. And sometimes there's reasoning and then we figure things out. But God tells us to do things, and sometimes we say to him, God, I'm just not comfortable with that. That does not make me comfortable. And God's response is always the same. And his response is not, oh, that makes you uncomfortable? Well, then let me change things. It's not what God does. God says, that makes you uncomfortable? His response is, oh, really? Oh, is that a fact? No, God knew that that was going to make us uncomfortable before he gave us the assignment. Before he speaks to us, before he redirects us, He knows that we're going to be uncomfortable, and he makes us uncomfortable on purpose, because that's where we grow. That is where our faith increases. That is where our faith is tested. Had Jacob left, or had God left Jacob in the area of Padan Aram with his father-in-law Laban all the rest of his days, then he would never have grown. His faith would never have been successful. Had Jacob refused to be obedient to God and says, "I ain't going back there. No chance am I going to go back and face my brother. He's mad at me, and he's big, and he's hairy, and I'm not going back." Had he been disobedient, then all of history would have been different. He would have not have grown. His faith was, but Jacob is a man of faith. Whatever else he may have been, whatever other shenanigans he might have pulled in his life, he is a man of faith, and he is a man of belief, and he is a man of trust, and he believes when God says, "I will be with you," he believes him, and he begins the journey home. And on the journey home, we see the second principle arise, is that God shows up at just the right time. Look at verses 1 and 2, the first two I read. Now notice that first line. And Jacob went on his way. He was obedient. Didn't want to be, but he was. He was obedient. And God's angels met him. And when he saw them, Jacob said, "This is God's camp." So he called the place Mahanaim. And as this event took place, we see that God met him. And God sent his angels to give him encouragement. Now, he hadn't met Esau. Esau was still a day, maybe 2 days away. He knew that he was going to be seeing him soon. He had sent an entourage, you know, to take him gifts. He had sent him cattle and sheep and camels and said, "Here, you go and show these, give these to him." And you'll also notice, he says, "You tell my lord Esau that his servant Jacob is coming, and I'm coming home. And I have these things, and I'll give you as gifts, and I have more that I'm bringing with me." And the word comes back, "Oh, we saw him. Yeah, he's coming. He's got 400 men with him, by the way." And he saw this as an invading army, as a task force to come and bring forth a threat, and it terrified him. And he was there, but yet he went on his way, and he was obedient. And when he got to the place of the encampment, which turns out to be the day before he actually meets his brother, God appears to him. He sent some angels. And when Jacob saw them, we don't have a description of them, but when he saw them, he knew who they were, to the point where he says, "This is the place where I have met God. This is God's camp. God has joined me in this place." And this was the only salve that Jacob had for the fear of his heart. This is the only mending he had in the depths of his spirit, the terror that he felt, the terror that he faced. He thought very well in the next day or two he could meet his demise. And not only he, but so could his wives and his children and his servants and all of his household. They thought they were going to fall, be set upon by trained, armed, angry men who would loot everything they had. This was their fear. And the only calm they had for their fear was the presence of God. But God is so good, and God was so gracious to Jacob that he met him on the way and said, "Not only am I going to tell you I am going to be with you, but I am going to show you that I am with you. Here is my presence. Here are my angels, and they are with you this day." And so we see that this is consistent in the nature of God. As God sends us down our life's journey, and all of our journeys are somewhat different, they happen to be converging at this place, at this moment, at this time of worship, but our journeys have been different. We all come from different places, different states, different backgrounds, different educations, different families. All sorts of different things are represented in this room. But as God has walked us down our life's journey, he has known every place that we're going to go. He has known every decision we're going to make. Doesn't always make them for us, but he knows them. And he has a path for us. And at some point in our lives, as we walk with God, he challenges us. And he says, my son, my daughter, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. We say, that makes us uncomfortable. He goes, oh, really? And go do it anyway. And so we come and we walk through this time. But at the right moment, and it is absolutely uncanny that at the moment we most desperately need a sign from God, he shows up. Maybe God will send you an angel in your life's journey. Maybe you're in a time of fear in your life. Maybe there are health issues, or maybe there are professional issues, or maybe there are family issues, or maybe there's just plain old fear issues welling up within you. It happens in life. It's part of living in this fallen world. But as we walk down this, at just the right time, with people of faith, God has this weird, uncanny way of showing up and revealing himself to us. Maybe he'll show you an angel. He's never sent me one. Sent me a wife. Didn't send me any angels. But he sends these things to us. He sends me friends. He sends me words of encouragement. He'll send me a scripture sometime that I'll find out, what I need today. He sends these things. He shows up in the strangest places, in the strangest ways, but he reveals himself and he says, I am with you. You don't have to fear. I am with you. Is there something of which you should fear that's down the road? Yeah, there are dangers out there. You have every right to fear that. But you don't have to let that fear defeat you. Why? Because I'm going to show up and I'm going to give you encouragement. I'm going to show you myself. I'm going to reveal me to you. And there is nothing more encouraging. There is nothing more fear defeating. There is nothing more powerful that you and I will ever see, ever face, or ever know than the presence of God. He is with us. He never leaves us or forsakes us. That's Jesus' promise to his children. And he is absolutely faithful to that reality in what he gives us. We will know his presence in the right situation at the right time. And then we see, when this happens, that a person of faith, when that faith meets the fear of this life, faith will win. Look here at verses. I'm going to kind of do a compilation of verse 10 and 11. Take out some of the parts in between, but let me read the pertinent parts for this message. Verse 10, I am unworthy. This is Jacob's prayer to God. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. And then skipping down to verse 11, please rescue me from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid of him. Now, we know that he was afraid of him, but for a mature man to publicly admit and have it recorded for all of history that you're afraid of another man, that is not easy for a man to do. But what we see transpiring, what we see developed in the life of Jacob through his entire life, from his conspiring to steal his brother's blessing, from being cheated by his father-in-law to cheating his father-in-law, all the things that transpire in his life, he comes now to a point of faith and promise and trial and tribulation, and he stands there and he says, I am afraid. I am afraid of tomorrow. I am afraid of what I'm going to face. I can't overcome this. My brother is greater than I. I cannot overcome him. I fear him. This is a statement of humility. This is a statement of one recognizing one's own shortcomings and where we must come to. And now he says, God of my father, God of my grandfather, God who has told me to come here, I'm going to trust you to take care of the next step. His humility and his faith has overcome his fear. And what you will see when you read the next chapter is genuinely God had preceded this prayer. God's activity well in advance of this prayer that he is offering up, asking for deliverance from the hand of his brother. God has already been at work in the life of Esau. Esau has already recanted his threat against his brother. He has already repented of the hatred in his heart, and he has forgiven his brother, and he now loves his brother, and all he wants to do is to hug him and kiss him and to be brothers again. Jacob doesn't know this, but this has already transpired by the hand of God. God has already dealt with that which Jacob feared more than anything else. He had already dealt with it. The prayer was pre-answered. And that's the way our God works. When our humility and our faith, when we come to recognize that there are things we just can't handle, there are situations that are beyond our reach, beyond our strength, beyond our wisdom, beyond our ability. And that is a hard thing for a man in our culture to admit. But when it comes to that point, and we will say, God, I'm going to trust you. When our faith and our humility meet, fear has no place. Fear is defeated. Is there still apprehension? Yes. Are there things that we have not yet seen what God has done that causes us anxiety? Yes. But there is nothing to fear because our God has gone ahead of our faith and our humility. And we have to bind those together. That's hard. Sounds easy. It is hard to do. It's part of the maturing process that God gives us. So what do we do with this? What does this say to us today in our modern world? Is this just kind of an interesting historical event that happened a long time ago in another part of the world? It is that, but it is also a picture of our lives. Now, the question and the challenge for us today is what I'm going to do with this nature of God. The God that did this with Jacob is the same God who sent his son and raised him from the dead. It's the same God who sent his spirit to speak to you and to work with you and to walk with you and me through our day in, day out exhibitions of life. He has not changed, nor has our nature. We need this, and we must apply this if we are going to see the effect in our lives.